Jealousy is the fear of comparison. On this week's podcast, I talk about the green-eyed monster, some reflections on growing up and the person I became, and an interview with another wonderful Infinite Love member whose dulcet tones calm my soul. It's my unconventional life. Boy! I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach. And not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is my unconventional life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way, it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? It's 9 a.m. Saturday morning as I tape this. I'm in England at my sister's house where I've been all week. Relaxing, spending time with my mum, meeting some friends, watching wrestling. I'm here alone. The house is quiet before the storm of people set to descend upon us later this morning. I want this week to talk about jealousy. I think it's an important emotion, and it's valid, and not something we should necessarily try to avoid at all costs. Yet it seems we spend most of our lives doing just that. Like I said in the opening, it's the fear of comparison. I mean, we often buy things so we will compare more favourably to others. We try to own people's emotions because we fear otherwise we may lose them from our life. But I don't think there's value in fighting it. Like every emotion, you should just sit with it, accept it as is, understand where it comes from, and that it's okay to feel. But don't blame others for it. And don't try to avoid it so much that you change your life and curdle your relationships and miss out on so much potential joy in the world. Try not to look at the world as you and everybody else. Smooth out that separation. Consider yourself as much a part of the whole and breathe in empathy in other people's joy. Just recently, I met up with a girl that I really like. She brightens my soul. Now, we didn't have sex. We didn't need to. Because when you truly love women, you don't need to do anything more than just be around them. The simple fact of being around a woman with a good soul to feel the feminine is enough to make your heart soar. But when she said that I'd inspired her to get back out into the dating scene, I'll be honest, there was a moment of jealousy, a faint, fleeting sense of fear, of potential loss perhaps. But I didn't let it change how I felt, or who I am, or what I want. I let it breathe. I accepted it as is, and it faded. I want her to be happy. If I never get to sleep with her, that's okay. If it means she finds someone who makes her joyful and fulfilled. I only want the world to be a better, happier place, and it's my goal to try to live my life in all ways to that end. So I've had some time since being at my sister's to reflect on my childhood, where I came from, and why I became the person I did. As usual, I watched a few episodes of The Waltons with my mum. I'm the one who always suggests it. I think I took a lot of influence from shows like that I watched on TV when I was growing up. The Wonder Years, Family Ties. Because they all had this moral underpinning. And they were all about love. I formed so many of the values and ideals I took into the world from them. But also from my dad, who was as kind, hard-working and supportive a man as I ever knew. In many ways, we didn't see the world in the same way. He perhaps didn't ask as many questions as I did, but in one way we did. We loved the world. The older I get, the more wonder I see in the diversity of life. And this perhaps is why I find myself drawn again back to America. This week perhaps was the start of a new epoch in the country. It definitely was. But while the face has changed, and indeed some of the laws on the surface may change too, its core has not, or its idealism. Yes, there is a great disparity of wealth, raging hypocrisy, but beneath it all, like streams running through a mountain or blood in your veins, there is still this majestic wonder in the idea of hope and goodness and human spirit. Like the 750,000 people who marched proudly through the streets of Los Angeles, and many more millions around the world in support of women's rights. Or this note that I saw posted on Facebook, having been left originally on an American family's Libyan neighbor's door after Trump's inauguration. It almost has me in tears as I read it. Dear neighbors, today brings a new stage for our country. Whatever happens, please know that there are still a lot of people who will fight for your right to practice your religion, to continue to live your lives without discrimination. You are welcome in our neighborhood, and if you need anything, please knock on our door. That is the America that I love, the America that FDR envisioned, and the America that I still know exists. I texted with my new potential parenting partner a lot more this week. I don't know, I really have high hopes. It seems the more grateful and hopeful I am, the more life gives me. I'm going to be super busy over the next few months, but I really hope she and I are able to spend enough time together to figure out if we're really a good fit. Stay tuned. I may even interview her on here. This week's interview is with Denise, a wonderful girl I met at the Infinite Love Discussion Group. After meeting up with her for a coffee, I decided I had to interview her for the show. She has a kindness in her voice and a gentle desire for truth in her soul and eyes that sparkle when the edges of her mouth crinkle up into a smile. Fuck, am I writing a romance novel here or recording a podcast? Anyway, she talks openly about her life story and worldviews and gives me hope about the future. Well, it is 2017, the very first day of 2017, so my friend Denise is with me here, and it's an honour to have you here on the first day of 2017. How are you?
I'm well, thanks for having me.
Ah, it's nice to be here. Now, listen, I've wanted to interview you for a while now, because I met you originally at the Potluck Discussion Group as part of the Infinite Love Facebook group, right?
Yes.
And I've met a lot of people in the poly community, but you were someone that kind of stood out for some reason. We met up and we had coffee and we chatted, and I thought, wow, this is someone that I really need to get on the podcast to discuss her experiences and her world views in terms of dating. Because, not to blow smoke up your butt, as they say, but you're very attractive and you're intelligent and you just kind of stood out like that. So tell me a little bit about your backstory, about how you got involved in essentially being non-monogamous. Like, when you grew up, you didn't have any sort of influences that pushed you in that direction, right?
No. Pure monogamy, that's what I grew up knowing.
Because your mum and dad were married and...
Right, and they're still married.
And happy.
They're still married. they're a wonderful partnership. And yes, they would say that they're still happy. It doesn't look like my ideal of what happy is.
Yeah. But do you think their relationship had an effect on what relationship you decided to pursue as an adult or not?
I definitely looked at the team that I felt that they were as parents. They were a wonderful team.
Right.
I didn't see a lot of affection between them. I feel like it was almost business-like.
They didn't hug or kiss? Or...
They did, but not overtly. I think that that was just more of a generational thing, and having that division of what's appropriate behavior in front of children, I guess. And
right.
As kids, we got a lot of hugs and kisses, but then as we became adults, that sort of went away, and it made it awkward. I didn't understand as an adult why you weren't still allowed to have physical affection to a certain degree with parents and family. I got the sense that once I started kissing boys or other people, that were not them, then we were not allowed to kiss on the mouth anymore. It was all cheek kissing. And it was never said, but I definitely got that sense of once they realized that I was old enough to be interacting with other kids my age, then I could feel that the affection, that's when it took a change, a turn, yeah.
That's fascinating, because my dad never... I once tried to hug him when I was about 27.
Oh, my God.
And he just sort of kind of froze like a cardboard cutout and didn't know what to do, you know. And I never tried again. But, I mean, I never doubted his love for me. Mm-hmm. I've always felt loved and supported 100%, but just wasn't affectionate in that way. My mum, I'm trying to remember. I don't remember her sort of kissing me either. At all, but very sort of huggy and talky and mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. So I'm not sure if I ever felt that sort of change in affection from my parents. I saw them affectionate towards each other, certainly. Mm-hmm. And I had that strong influence that was what I wanted, was one person for the rest of my life, for mm-hmm. sure. I think that definitely had that effect. Even though it wasn't the exact situation I would have wanted myself, it was close enough to it that it influenced me in that way. So after you started kissing boys or whoever, then you started pursuing monogamous ideals at that point? Or really early on you would...
The way I see it now is it's almost as if you're gay and you grow up uh-huh. and you don't have any kind of an outlet or someone to see what a homosexual relationship looks like. You may not realize it. You know something inside of you is different, but you don't really have something to go off of. And all of a sudden, if I were gay, that all of a sudden one day I see two lesbians and realize, oh my gosh, that's what I am. I feel like I always had a sense of there's something different in me, that even though I see my parents and I love them, they love me, I feel supported, I feel loved, I knew that it wasn't exactly, I never had the feeling of I can't wait to get married, ever.
Okay.
I never had the feeling of, or concern of meeting the one, ever. I always... just felt like there's people out there and I will meet them and I will have happiness in my life. And I it was never really a concern.
Right.
I think I thought about children more in my late 20s. I thought of, I want to have a kid, but I didn't ever understand where the child would come from because I was never really driven by monogamy. But I did for very many years try to be monogamous.
Right.
And felt that I was the world's worst monogamist. Because I, although I was loyal to people, could never fully commit and felt that...
What do you mean not fully commit? You mean?
Emotionally, I just wasn't... I don't think in every relationship I was really 100% in it.
So you're saying did you cheat on anybody or you just weren't emotionally there?
I didn't cheat while I was in relationships, but I definitely feel that physically, but I do feel that emotionally I probably did cheat because... getting out of one relationship may have already started something emotionally with someone else that led to a relationship. So I tried to be careful with people's feelings, but also in your 20s, you make a lot of mistakes. So I was really adamant about honesty and being faithful was important to me, but I didn't know how to do that in a monogamous relationship when I didn't feel like... I feel that I was very lucky to have wonderful people in my life. I have had... great relationships, but there was always something missing. It wasn't missing in the other person, and that's what I always felt confused by.
Right.
I didn't feel that it was right to feel that one person was going to fulfill my life. And I don't think that you should, I've learned now, you shouldn't expect another human being to fulfill your needs and wants and be right. This thing. That should come within you, inside you.
100%.
Your partner should share in that, and you should be individuals coming together to enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
But I questioned my sexuality for years. I came out as gay when I was 21 or 22 years old, only to then date a man and be completely confused and be a closeted heterosexual for 6 months. I lied to all my friends about dating a man because I was embarrassed and thinking that maybe I had made a mistake, that I wasn't gay. But now I realize it's just sexuality is such a fluid thing. I'm not really worried about what I am or I'm not.
Yeah, I think certainly as a female as well, I think female sexuality is far more fluid than men's.
Mm.
Talk to a few people that say that guys are very hardwired. Once a guy gets to be 18 years old, he's pretty much set the way he is, whether he's going to be gay, bi, straight, whatever it is. And whereas women are far more fluid. And I think that's why guys have a lot of fetishes and stuff like that, because they just get stuck in this mindset for whatever reason. When they're like 14 years old, maybe like they see someone's stockings when they're jerking off, and then it's there for the rest of their life, you know?
Yeah.
Because I met a number of girls, actually, a very good friend of mine in England, who's gay. I mean, I think, no, she really identifies as gay, but she's been with the same girl for the last 11 years. Mm-hmm. And before her, never even, at least if you believe what she says, never had any thoughts about girls in that way whatsoever, and just met a girl and went in that direction, you know?
As far as relationships, I knew that I had interest in women, but it wasn't until my first girlfriend that we were together for several years, and I didn't really care whether I was gay or straight. I wasn't worried about the label. I just knew that I loved her.
Right.
I haven't loved a woman since her. I just really could see my life. And even though we're not together anymore, and it's been years, it's been 18 years, we still love each other and care for one another and are just happy that we had that time together with each other. And I that's rare, I think, to be able to look at a relationship and say that was time well spent with another person, and I'm grateful that I had it.
It's healthy. Yeah, it's healthy that you can say that, because a lot of people can't. I mean, I'm not friends with almost any of my exes, actually. And that was part of me really looking at my life 5 years ago, or however long it goes, when I split up with my ex, and I've said, look, every relationship I've been in that was monogamous and deep and long term, they're not in my life anymore, and they don't want to be in my life anymore. Yet every relationship I've had that's been non-committal and relatively casual, albeit deep and emotional, they're still in my life. We still text, we still love each other deeply. And I'm like, why do I keep going back to this sort of paradigm that doesn't work out, doesn't end well, when maybe I should just stick with what was working? I guess the issue is that once it starts working too well, then everybody wants it to go in that direction, you know? But I don't know whether that comes from a genuine desire to be with just one person, or do we let jealousy get the better of us?
Do you struggle with whether you're monogamous or not?
No.
You don't? Okay.
No, I'm pretty hardwired. Now, could I meet someone and go, you know what, I don't want to see anybody else right now? Absolutely. I don't think I'd ever really say I don't want them to see anybody else, because I truthfully believe love has to come without any kind of limits or any caveats. You can't say, I only love you if you don't love someone else, which essentially is what you're saying with monogamy, right? Yeah. But I don't like placing labels on it. I don't know how I'll feel in a year's time. And to me, again, that speaks to polyamory or non-monogamy, because you don't know how you'll feel. I think you can say that you're non-monogamous and you're polyamorous, or you don't even need to place those labels on it. The bottom line is, like you said, you can take every situation on its own merit, which means you might meet someone and not want to be with somebody else for a certain amount of time, and then when that changes, if you're open and you can communicate enough, hopefully you don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and you can keep the positives of a relationship and still move forward. Because we see that in marriages all the time, you know. Do you deal with jealousy at all? Is there anything, I mean, you said that you always felt different in the fact that you didn't feel like you were waiting for one person. Do you ever experience jealousy when you're with more than one person at the same time?
Sure, yeah. It's one of the best things I've learned is that previously, before polyamory, rarely experienced jealousy. Rarely. I felt very confident in my relationships and had issues with other people feeling jealousy and kind of judging them for it in the past. I feel that I've changed a lot in the past 5 years and in what I believe. And I now understand that jealousy is not this big, ugly monster that people have within inside them. It's a basic, normal human feeling. You can be happy, you can be sad, and you can be jealous. You're allowed to have that feeling.
Mm.
I don't know that people know that they are allowed to feel jealous. It happens, and it's not a bad thing if you feel it. That's, I guess, just how I was brought up, that jealousy is this awful thing that you shouldn't feel. But when you have it, it's generally based in fear of losing what you have. And if you can acknowledge that fear, what it is that you're losing, are you concerned that you're going to lose quality time with your partner if he or she spends time with someone else? Are you going to lose some physical affection? It's trying to put your finger on what it is you're afraid of.
Right.
But the best way to deal with it is to bring it to your partner and let them know first and foremost that what they're doing, hopefully, isn't bad. What they're doing, whatever actions they've taken that have caused this reaction in you, you're not going to your partner and saying, what you're doing is making me feel this way. It's what you're doing is completely okay if you're in a healthy relationship. I'm just having a feeling because of it. Something's happening in me that I need to go work on. I just needed to put it out there for you so you know what's going on with me. It's part of being very open and very honest. And that lets your partner know where you're coming from and gives them the chance to think about what they want to do, if they want to continue, if they're just going on a date with someone that they care about.
Right.
And if they want to continue going on that date, and what they can do in turn is talk to you before their next date and say, what can I do to make you feel okay? What can, as long as it's just a constant communication of me saying, I'm having these feelings, I just need a minute to think about it, I'll be okay, you go do your date, have a great time, and we'll talk afterwards. It's really about knowing yourself. It's not about what the other person is doing that's causing the jealousy. It's something in you. And I believe a lot of things that people have within themselves, they don't realize it's in them first. You're just having a reaction to someone else's actions. The jealousy is not based in what the other person is doing. It's inside you. Does that
right.
make sense?
Yeah, it's a reflection of yourself. Yeah, we see in the world a reflection of ourselves. But a lot of people say, oh, I couldn't really date two people at the same time because I'm just too jealous, you know. So they accept that they're jealous, but because of that, they'll change their life so they don't feel jealous. Whereas you're saying, express it, feel it, it's okay, it's a natural human emotion, but you shouldn't necessarily change your life to avoid feeling it. Is that what you're saying?
Right, right. And generally, just the act of saying it out loud to your partner, for me personally, makes it go away. About 90% of those feelings will just go away because I've just owned them and expressed them openly to my partner. And when my partner receives that information and we just have a dialogue, I can generally walk away from that conversation with a feeling of happiness that that I've taken care of myself first.
Right.
I've taken care of my feelings and not put my partner in a defensive place where they have to worry about what's going to make them happy for fear of hurting my feelings. So it's a balance of owning your own feelings, but letting your partner know that it's okay. I want you to be happy. I want you to do what you want to do. But I'm just letting you know where I'm at. And I think it's really hard for a lot of people to do that.
Yeah.
To tell their partners. Because generally what you'll do is just hold on to it. And then it comes out in a weird passive-aggressive manner. And it's taken a long time for me to learn to be vulnerable, to let someone know, like, hey, I'm having these feelings, but it's all good. Because it's amazing when you actually allow yourself to feel things and talk about it, these ugly feelings dissipate really quickly.
Yeah, I've seen that personally recently, for sure. It's fascinating to me. How far along in the journey are you now? I mean, how many years would you say you've been openly non-monogamous?
I think it's four.
About four?
I think it's about 4 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we're all on a journey. I'm on a journey as well. I'm really only dipping my toe in the water right now. I suppose, is there a point where you get to a period of stasis where you feel like, I've pretty much got this figured out now and I'm happy and I don't really need to do any more work on myself? Or do you think there's always going to be issues coming up?
Oh, you're always going to be working on yourself. I just think every human, you never...
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
The second you think you've got it all figured out, life will pull the rug out from underneath you and show you that, no, you haven't. It's a constant journey. But as far as the relationships, I'm still being surprised by different scenarios that I didn't expect and having to work through.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, how many people are you seeing at the moment?
Actively, I have one, I guess I would call him a core partner, and another person that I see maybe once or twice a month.
Okay. So with work-wise, that seems like a pretty feasible use of your time, because ultimately you can say you're non-monogamous or polyamorous, but there's only so many hours in the day right. when you're not working, etc.
It's basic math right? after a while.
What do they call that? Your dating card? There's only so many slots on your dance card. What is it?
The punch card, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
That's that. I realized I got up to dating three people, and that's overwhelming. It's too much. Yeah.
So really, to you, just dating two people is about the right sort of.
Right, and at this point, I feel that the relationship I'm in right now is one of the best relationships I've ever had, as far as having my needs met, and he's married, so it's amazing how happy I can be with someone that we're not on the, what do they call it? The relationship escalator where you start dating and then you move in together and then you get engaged. Like, we're not doing that. And it's nice. It's nice to have the freedom to just care about someone and not worry about where is it going to go.
Right. Yeah.
It's just a day-to-day happiness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. That gives me a lot of hope that I can sort of do that.
Yeah,
without having to wonder about what's going to happen, where it's going to go. Just to be happy in the moment and to be present. And that's really it. I've been reading that book, The Power of Now. Have you ever heard of it?
I've heard of it. I haven't read it.
Yeah, Eckhart Tolle. And he says, everything you need to be happy, you have in this instant right now. Mm-hmm. All unhappiness, all stress, all pain, all suffering either happens with identifying in the past or projecting concerns and fears in the future.
Right.
And if you can be present in this moment, it's gold. So I feel like I'm pretty close to it, you know, but I'm still only dipping my toe in the water, you know, because I wonder what is the ideal number of people, right? I asked Rye, you know, Rye, mm-hmm. the polyamory consultant, and he said that he couldn't really put a number on it. You know, he says he's got three main girlfriends mm-hmm. and a number of maybe three or four other people that he sees in here and there throughout his life, and he feels that's pretty much it, but always open to meeting new people. And to me, perhaps I just see it like friendships. I mean, how many friends do you have?
Right.
I don't know. I mean, quite a lot. I've got pictures up on my wall of about 30 or 40 people that I consider close friends.
Mm-hmm. Those friends all don't require you to see them every single day.
Right.
You don't need to talk on the phone every single day. Some of those friends you can pick up after a month of not seeing each other, and it's as if that time hadn't gone by. You just can pick right back up. And there are certain relationships that have that ability, that they don't require so much
investment of time.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of it. It's like varying friendships that you have. It's this wonderful connection. Have you ever been in a relationship with someone and it's a bit tumultuous, but you care about each other and you want to be together, and then you break up?
Yeah.
And then you realize, have you done the breakup and get back together for a minute scenario?
Not really, no.
It's amazing when you break up, all of a sudden there's the pressure is off. And then all of a sudden the person becomes more attractive to
yes.
you. Imagine just having the pressure off all the time.
Right.
So that's the way I see it, is that it's these wonderful friendships, and it's varying degrees of effort that you need to put in to each person, and it varies by person. So I don't have a magic number. I don't feel I mean, who knows, I could meet another person, two people tomorrow that are wonderful, that I want to have in my life. It always comes down to scheduling, right. Essentially there's just so many hours in the day. But I liken it to when people have children. You have one child and you love it, and you all your love goes into that one child just because they exist, and you can't imagine having that much love for another child if you have one. But then all of a sudden you have another child, and I'm speaking, I don't have children of my own, but I've heard people talk
yeah.
about, if you have a second child, you're amazed that you have the capacity to love another child. And then some people have four kids.
Yeah.
You have the capacity to love your children or family members, multiple family members. Why are you not allowed to have that in intimate relationships as well?
Yeah.
So I don't really draw a line with my ability to share love with people and bonds and closeness with many people.
I'm on the same page, I think, certainly, yeah. I don't see the love that you feel for someone that you're sexually intimate with any differently than the love you feel for someone that you're not. You're a platonic friend with. It's just some people that I love, I want to see naked and rub. And some people, you know, I'd rather they leave their clothes on. But mm-hmm. I still love them.
Right.
It's the same thing. I get it. You can say you love some people more because you're more intimately connected with them. You know, like I love my mom. It'll be very difficult for me to love anyone as much as I love my mom. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's great value in saying there's a different type of love. You know, I think that's limiting perhaps. But I don't know really. But I've never had kids either. And obviously part of this podcast is my desire to be a parent. Now, you mentioned before that when you were younger, you were thinking about being a parent. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's still an interest to you or?
In my early 30s, my late 20s, early 30s, it was. Having a child was, I felt very important after my 20s. I wanted my 20s to be my time.
Yeah.
To do as much as I could for myself and be selfish so that when it came time to have a kid, then I would feel like I had kind of gotten some stuff out of my system because my mom had my sister and I when she was in her 20s, and I feel that she just devoted her life to us, which I am eternally grateful for.
Yeah.
But I learned from her that she sort of really gave up a lot of herself and her identity to be there for us. And I wanted to try to feel like I could have a little bit more of a balance if I had my own child, that I could be there for the child, but also have a sense of identity and a sense of self. And
autonomy, yeah.
Yeah, and in not feel that I was putting any of my own inner, I don't know what you would call it, inner turmoils or inner demons on my kid as I'm trying to work trying to work through them. So I felt like I was just trying to do a lot of work on myself.
Great.
To try to show up for a child. But 30 came and went, 35 came and went, and I didn't have children. And now I'm going to be 40 next month, and I'm excited for that. And I really love my life, and children haven't been a priority. If I really wanted them, I would have had them by now, I think.
Right. And so you think if you don't have children now, you'll be okay? You'll be...
It will always be something I think I wish I could have experienced, but I realize I just really want to experience the feeling of being pregnant. It's not about having children. It's the desire of wanting to feel pregnancy and that process. And I'm sure there's plenty of women who think I'm crazy for that.
Right.
But it's amazing to spend so much time trying not to get pregnant in your lifetime that how amazing would it be to actually not worry about being pregnant and actually have that feeling.
Yeah.
An amazing experience.
It's the most miraculous thing we can do as human beings, to create mm-hmm. another human yeah. being. I was just talking to a friend about this week, and she sort of re-identified with that majesty of creation now, to where before, when she thought she couldn't have children, she would have sex purely from a fun sort of standpoint, and because of that she'd have sex with people that she wouldn't necessarily think were wonderful potential parents or anything mm-hmm. like that. But now she's more identified with that and thinks she can have kids. She's now saying, I'm not going to have sex with anybody unless I think they'd be a great parent. And it becomes a very different situation in mm-hmm. that regard, you know, which is interesting because when I was younger, I just wanted to find one person and fall in love and get married and spend my life together. And then mm-hmm. even when that wasn't the ideal, I still felt like sex had to have these caveats. We had to love each other. We had to be in a relationship. I had to trust them, all these different things. And I'm now trying to find out, maybe it doesn't need to be that strong. It doesn't have to have that many obligations attached to it, you know. I do think that I can't really have casual sex. Mm-hmm. Like we were talking earlier, just when it becomes a very almost perfunctory thing, you're just there to sort of use each other's bodies to get off, like, ugh. You know what I mean? That doesn't seem like a positive experience mm-hmm. for me. But it doesn't have to be the opposite. It doesn't have to mean everything.
Right.
It just shouldn't mean nothing. See what I'm saying?
Yeah. I was able, as I was growing up, to separate love and sex. So I did have sex because it's an enjoyable thing to do. I don't think I ever had sex with the idea that this is the person I'm going to be with. No, sex and love were always very separate for me.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have no idea where I learned my idea or concept of my own sexuality, because I wasn't really taught by my parents. It was kind of a just don't get knocked up. That was the goal. That was what I was told. Just don't get knocked up. And I just formed my own ideas. I guess it actually worked out really well for me, because growing up Irish Catholic, I've heard about people having shame and guilt put upon them with their sexuality, but yeah. I never really felt that. I just didn't get much of anything, I think, from my parents. Just the fear of becoming pregnant when I wasn't ready. That was the biggest fear they instilled in me. So I feel like I had the freedom to develop my own sexuality in the way that best suited me.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty happy for that, because as I've gotten older and having open conversations with people and hearing about people's shame or guilt or fear that they were going to be judged for certain things and hiding a lot of their own sexuality, makes me feel very grateful and lucky that
yeah.
I didn't have that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I did necessarily either. I never got the sex talk from my parents. I think I learnt about it from TV or whatever else. I bought some condoms. My first girlfriend, I remember, she asked me over to her house because her parents are going to be away at the weekend. So I'm like, right, this is it. There goes my cherry. So I went down to Boots, the pharmacy, and I bought a pack of condoms. And when I went home, I put them on the table and went to use the restroom. And when I came back, my dad had walked into the kitchen and seen this box of condoms. And he was really, I don't know if he was mad or embarrassed or whatever it was, but he like picked them up very serious, almost furious, and said, what are these for? I was like, Dad, if you don't know now, it's a little bit late. Can't help you.
How old were you?
17.
Mm-hmm.
No, I would have been... Hold on. Yes, I was 17, because we didn't have sex in the end. We went over there, I made out, and she said, not going to have sex. We didn't actually have sex until, God, like 3 or 4 months later when I was 18, and I'd got meningitis in between times and nearly died. So I could have died a virgin.
Oh my gosh.
Right? Although, to be perfectly honest, the first time I did have sex probably wasn't wasn't much to write home about anyway. Oh, it was dreadful. It was like 45 seconds, like three strokes. It was like a bad game of tennis. It was like But you know what was beautiful about it? Like the next morning when I came down for breakfast, I thought I was Don Juan. Like, I honestly, I could have had a smoking jacket and a pipe, you know.
Nice. Saving the rest for next week, when I'll be back to talk more about my unconventional life and how close I am, perhaps, to becoming a parent. Plus, more fun banter and info from Denise.
I could go with my partner.
Uh-huh.
But invite you as my guest, and that therefore I would be responsible for your behavior. So
okay.
You can't be the creepy British guy lurking around the party. but I would basically be vouching for you that you're...
Fantastic. So any potty girls out there with functioning wombs that are looking for a creepy British baby?
I've learned, especially because of polyamory, that just because sex isn't part of a relationship anymore doesn't negate the relationship. It doesn't make the relationship a failure, or all of a sudden now you just can't be together.
I'll see you next week. Well, that is it. Another week on this earth, another blessing. Thank you for listening and being part of my journey. Drop me a line if you have a comment or question, or if you think you know someone who'd be a good parenting partner for me. If you like the show, help spread the word, write a review, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher so you don't miss an episode. I will be back next week, but until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, be kind and happy. Let love rule. Hello.